Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science as we invite a new expert every week to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks.
And this week, we are not inviting an expert to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions. We're going to do something totally different because pretty much everything in my life is about the World Cup.
Right, yeah.
So by the time this goes out, I'll probably be in Qatar, fully steeped in it. So we're asking a very different kind of question, which is, who would win the World Cup of Science? In other words, who is the best scientist the world has ever seen?
I mean, immediately, your mind's racing, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's a lot of candidates. I foresee massive arguments about who makes the shortlist, massive arguments about who's winning each round. I think it's going to be really fun.
I mean, I'm going to really struggle if I don't get my way on this. Because I should be the decider of all this. And obviously, you know, we're not going to be able to do it on like papers published or because times change. And you know, it's really hard to sort of know exactly how you compare against another.
You immediately, the sort of obvious problem is comparing someone like an Archimedes, who sort of, there was so much stuff that was available been done.
Fucking open goal.
I mean, basically, yes. Like, at that time, you could sort of turn your hand to anything.
Smart and get
some results.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at someone who's working now, it's all much more focused.
It's largely been done, hasn't it?
Yeah. So that'll be a tough matchup.
Yeah.
I assume, given that the podcast is called Eureka, that Archimedes will be in there. Feels like he should be.
Oh, he's a shoo-in,
isn't he? The guy's not fucking about, is he? but it's going to, I think this is going to get quite heated.
Yeah, all right.
And well, I'm looking forward to it. Not many scientists are household names. You've heard of Stephen Hawking, Brian Cox and Marie Curie, but you've probably never heard of 99% of the people who've won Nobel Prizes in science. And to be clear, Brian Cox has never won a Nobel Prize and he never will. So while there are plenty of scientists around, how many of those are truly great scientists? And who is or was the best? Is it even possible to compare one scientist against another? Let's say yes, it is. And that's why this week we're asking, who would win the World Cup of Science? Obviously, we have stolen the concept from, well, firstly, I suppose, from FIFA.
I'm not sure they invented the knockout.
No, but I mean, the World Cup is theirs. You can't sort of deny that.
Yeah, this is the Cricket World Cup.
Yeah,
but I don't think the ICC are saying, FIFA's contribution to this.
I don't think we need to.
Fuck FIFA.
Yeah, it is fuck FIFA. Although I'm out in Qatar. So actually, no, let's not fuck FIFA until I get back from Qatar, if that's okay.
We'll just delay putting this out till next year.
Also, I guess a slight tip of the hat to Richard Osman, who does does the World Cup of biscuits and World Cup of chocolate on Twitter. We might do something similar, actually, for this on Twitter.
Are we asking his permission?
No, we're not. Well, we don't. You definitely don't need to. Like you say, I don't know who first came out with the knockout format.
It wasn't Richard Osman.
But thank you. Well done. We're going to have it. Now, we've sort of, not arbitrarily, but we have just had to make a decision and say, which 16 scientists are going to be in the draw.
Yeah, so we're just doing the last 16.
Yes, and you can't really scrutinise too carefully how we've arrived at that 16, I don't think. There are some absolutely colossal omissions.
Do you think so?
Yes, I do.
Like who? We're going to start the arguments now.
Yeah. You don't like him. Michio Kaku?
I mean, yeah. Why would he even be anywhere near the last 16?
Well, I'm just thinking of people. What is the criteria for putting them in? That people have heard of them? And there's not...
Well, I mean, in some cases, I guess so.
Yeah.
But, and that will, you know, obviously, that will be effectively, you know, them having a weak defence when it comes to the actual competition, won't it? If it's just, oh, we've heard of you, that's not going to cut a lot of ice.
No, true.
I don't think.
I mean, are you disappointed you've not made it yourself?
Well, sort of yes and no, in that obviously it would be great to be in the last 16, but I don't want people scrutinising my scientific record to see whether I deserve to be there, because there's not a lot of it.
No. What was the field that you contributed to?
Sort of
cooling... So something to do with cooling and quantum
superconductors.
Fields.
Yeah. It was using superconducting weak link capacitor circuits below 0.3 Kelvin.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a lot of competition in that. No, I mean, if that was the World Cup.
Okay. Well, I mean, we might as well say Cox isn't in there.
Brian Cox is not in there. No. I mean, he's, you know, he has worked as a scientist. He has, you know, published papers as a scientist. He runs. I don't know if he runs or ran a research group.
He teaches at
university. He does a good everyday workaday job as a scientist, or he certainly did until he was gurning on TV all the time.
Yeah,
but he's not. He's not top 16.
No,
he's not top 32. I don't think.
No, I mean he's nowhere near. Here's an interesting omission that I think is correct. Mendeleev.
Yeah, well, obviously, international sanctions against the Russians mean that he can't enter.
Because you'd think, like, the periodic table.
It's quite a big deal, isn't it?
It is a big deal.
I mean, that's a crushing blow for Dmitry.
And did it sort of come to him in a dream as well, which is nice.
Yeah, I think it did.
Yeah.
So, that is difficult.
Who else? I mean, there are some big ones.
So we talked, I can't remember what episode it was, but we talked about Ibn al-Haytham, the Islamic scientist.
The optics
basically,
guy.
Yeah, he wrote the whole sort of, you know, optics, reflection, refraction, did, you know, massive work at a time when nobody was doing good science at all. And certainly
and
not in the West. No, he's not in.
So he massively picked the guy up.
Yeah.
But he's not made the last 16.
I mean, this is cruel, though, isn't it? The World Cup is like this.
Yeah,
You get teams who just don't make it for some reason. For me, like, one of the people that should be in there who isn't is Chandrasekhar, who discovered, or basically black holes.
He
worked out on a ship, like, what would happen to a collapsing star. He was, like, travelling from India to the UK. Worked out what would happen to a collapsing star of sufficient mass, realized that it would collapse under its own gravity and turn into a black hole and, like, you know, and create this sort of singularity at the center. Worked all that out basically in a, you know, about 3 minute calculation in his head, you know, and didn't win a Nobel Prize for it for about 30 or 40 years afterwards. Basically, because he was treated really badly when he got to the UK. So Arthur Eddington, who was like the premier astronomer in the UK, didn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an element of racism, certainly.
Of course there was.
Some people have suggested actually Eddington was gay and actually quite fancied him. And just all got a bit...
Complicated,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so Chandrasekhar ended up leaving the UK, leaving England to go to America because he was denied every opportunity, basically because of the colour of his skin. And he sort of got to America and settled. He said, I'm just going to settle for being a second-class scientist because I can't be bothered with all this shit. So I'm a second-class scientist. You're not getting into the World Cup.
Not in, I'm afraid. Okay, here, just some absolute classics. Copernicus.
He's not in there, is he?
Not in. Galileo.
Not in.
I mean,
last 16.
Don't be looking for the grave thinking... I'm surprised I've not made it, actually. I feel like I made a pretty decent contribution.
When you look at who is in there, you know, and there is a sense of, yes, okay, they're sort of household names in some cases, But actually, you know, Galileo was good, but maybe...
That's kind of it.
But maybe, you know, he wasn't like... Because you build up this mythology, don't you? He's like the only one before Newton that people talk about. And actually, he wasn't the only one who was doing any work. Copernicus, well, you know, he was very good astronomer. But there were lots of other astronomers that also didn't make it.
Mm.
I mean...
Well, listen, we've had to draw the lines. Be very interesting to hear from you who you think we've missed off, and undoubtedly we have missed off quite a lot of people.
Well, Mary Anning, I think, could have made it in, but didn't. You know, basically the first person to really do proper fossil studies, digging up fossils in Dorset, and you know, really badly treated as well, obviously by the male establishment, but incredibly good scientist. Not good enough, though, Mary, I'm afraid.
Yeah, in the bin with Copernicus.
I mean, the bin is full of real talent.
The bin, I like it because it's quite diverse and there are some people in there who definitely aren't household names, and that's a good thing because you sort of shine a light on the stuff that they did when actually it hasn't really been shone on them in the way that it should have been previously. And they can still be contenders, I think.
Yeah.
Stephen Hawking is in there. I'm slightly surprised that you accepted that, because although he definitely is a household name, you, I know, I'm definitely betting against him.
I kind of am. But, you know, I mean, when you look at the quality of who else is in there, I don't think he's going to progress very far. And people might be quite shocked by that. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because he's one of the very few scientists that people actually have heard of.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you know a bit about, you know, what else is out there in terms of, you know, being a good scientist, I can tell you Hawking isn't going to do that well.
No, I mean...
No depth to the man.
Also, if you said to someone, what was Hawking's contribution to science, I don't think people would know that.
No, I don't think they would.
I think very unlikely that people... I mean, you went up to 10 people on the street. I'm not sure any of them is saying... Hawking radiation. It's not. You might get someone say something about black holes.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah,
but that's about as good as you're going to get.
Yeah, and he did the whole sort of, you know, turning the what was it? I mean, he basically sort of worked out that there would be a singularity or equivalent to.
Well, hang on. Let's not shoot it. Right, yeah, we'll get into all of this.
You're right.
This is how we're going to do this. The rules are simple. We've picked 16 scientists. Will go head to head in a battle of the brains. Four rounds, the knockouts, quarterfinals, semi-finals, and then the final. We've done a random draw, and in each round, two scientists will have a face-off. I'll be arguing in favour of one scientist, Michael will be arguing in favour of the other. We'll have to convince the other person that our scientist is better. That can be determined by their body of work, their longevity in the game. Maybe we'll just land on the scientist with the most street cred. Like an Einstein. Welcome to the World Cup of Scientists. Somehow we're going to have to decide who wins in each matchup. It's been a sort of we've picked the 16 and then done a random draw. Some people have got quite lucky. Some people really haven't. Inevitably. That's part and parcel of the process.
I mean, looking at the draw, I'm very sad for Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, he's up against it, actually.
What happens if we don't agree?
Coin toss, maybe.
Effectively,
Going to have to be.
Okay, all right.
Fine. Okay, shall we get to it?
Let's get to it, right.
I might do a rundown of who's in.
Okay,
all right. I'll give you the full draw. So, Barbara McClintock against Isaac Newton. A decent matchup.
Yeah.
Henrietta Leavitt. Francis Crick. Marie Curie, Stephen Hawking. Bad luck, Hawking.
It's going to be a tough 90 minutes.
Don't
want to
curse it, but... this is... I hate this, because for me, this would be a good final. Einstein against Enrico Fermi.
That's going to take some work.
Richard Dawkins against Lynn Margulis.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, thing about... Dawkins, you got to sort of try and focus on his
old Dawkins.
On the old Dawkins, isn't it? Yeah, it's old Dawkins against Lynn Margulis. JBS Haldane against the big guy Archimedes. Charles Darwin against 2UU.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's tough on her, I would say.
Really, yeah, really, really tough, because Darwin's got some moves. Dorothy Hodgkin against Vera Rubin. So those are your 16. And yeah, I think it's a really good mix. That is a really good mix.
It's sort of interesting, isn't it? Because I don't think people, I mean, a lot of those names probably won't be familiar with to most of our listeners. So hopefully we'll sort of shed some light on them. We don't want to be boring and do a history of science episode or anything, but they made some interesting contributions that actually need to be appreciated, I think, a bit more than they are. Yeah.
Okay, so first matchup. Round one, in the red corner, we've got Barbara the Hawk McClintock. And in the blue corner, we've got Isaac Golden Boy Newton. I am going to argue, it's just like a big ask, for Barbara McClintock. Now, I don't think many people will have heard of Barbara McClintock.
No.
But she was amazing. So she studied the cytogenetics of maize. Now, that doesn't sound that exciting, I will grant you. But her discoveries were so far ahead of her time. I mean, they were basically scoffed at.
Yeah.
When she was doing the work, and she had a great attitude. She just sort of persevered. She's like, I don't really mind. These are the results I'm getting. I think I'm right. And it turned out she absolutely was. And it was really the stuff that she was finding out was in total opposition to the sort of prevailing theories of genetics. So it was groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Groundbreaking stuff. She basically saw that genes could kind of move around within chromosomes.
Yeah, just by looking at maize.
Yeah, it was sort of, you know, we don't see it that much, but you know, maize has lots of different colours all over it. So like a corn on the cob.
Yeah.
Not just yellow, but
in America
they have the sort of purple and yellow, especially in Mexico, actually. Yeah. And so looking at those patterns, and she worked this stuff out. And in the end, I think like 30 years after making these discoveries, she finally got a Nobel Prize.
Okay, one of those.
Yeah. But
it was just too far ahead of her. I mean, she effectively was too far ahead of her time.
I think she had
a lot of people just ignore her and think she was a stupid old bag sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she, I mean, to be fair, she just sort of, I think, pulled away from actually bothering to publish and really sort of
I think she was just someone who just loved her work.
Yeah.
And didn't need the approval of the scientific community. And in fact, she wasn't getting it.
Yeah.
But just carried on regardless.
Right. Oh, so really good scientist from that perspective. She didn't need other people to just, you know, she didn't need awards. She didn't need anything. She just
really
got
good
on with
scientist
the work.
Eventually got the ultimate prize as well.
Yeah. Okay. She wasn't Isaac Newton, was she?
So I think it rings a bell. Tell me a bit about this guy.
I mean, he invented calculus, which is used in every branch of science now.
So did Leibniz.
Well, Newton did it earlier and arguably did it in a way that was sort of more accessible.
We used Leibniz's notation more.
Yeah, what else did Leibniz do?
He made the biscuits. I love those biscuits.
Whereas, I mean, Isaac Newton wrote his Principia, which contains like the, you know, theory of gravitation, like worked out how all the planets move, worked out what gravity does, not what gravity is, because nobody really knows what gravity is, but he worked out how gravity works.
Yeah.
Do I need to go on? I mean, McClintock's not...
I don't think...
That's like you versus Erling Haaland.
And who are you putting through? I feel bad for Babs.
Yeah, understandably, and she's great, but she, I mean, it's the luck of the draw, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a really, really tough draw, and I think we probably agree that Newton's progressive.
You can't put Newton there in the first round.
Because we've sort of scratched the surface of Newton as well, like the guy...
Yeah.
The guy's done loads.
Yeah.
Wasn't very nice though, Newton, was he?
I don't know if that's an issue yet, is it?
No, I guess not. No. All right. Newton goes through.
And the winner of round one in the blue corner, Mr. Isaac Newton.
That's a fair result, isn't it?
I think so. And I'm glad
she's done well to get through to the last 16.
I'm glad we've talked about Babs.
Yeah, yeah.
Very glad.
Yeah, yeah. Next game, Henrietta Leavitt versus Frances Crick. Now, people, I think, will have heard of Frances Crick.
Yes.
They probably haven't heard of Henrietta Leavitt. Let me tell you, I think she stands a really good chance against Crick.
Well, we've already won one of these battles, and if that's the case, I'm going to need a moment to gather my thoughts, get my facts together. We'll have a quick break. When we get back, we'll see whether Henrietta Leavitt really does stand a chance against the mighty Frances Crick. We'll then be turning up a gear with Marie Curie versus Stephen Hawking. And finally, Einstein versus Enrico Fermi.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
For round two, in the red corner, we've got Henrietta, leave it out, leave it. And in the blue corner, we've got Frances Chop Chop Crick.
Henrietta Leavitt, she was an astronomer in the early 1900s, working at Harvard. Mm-hmm. And, before actually women were sort of accepted and recognised as being astronomers, effectively. Yeah. But she did a lot of work with these stars called Cepheid variables. And they pulse, they go brighter and then they go dimmer. And she discovered loads of examples of stars that were like this. But basically, while she sort of took records and catalogued everything, you know, she was really good at just being that sort of everyday scientist, in that, you know, she kept immaculate records, great observations, but she discovered that basically you could relate the period of the brightness, so how long between maximum brightness is, and it's sort distance of distance from Earth, isn't it? So she basically made it possible to calculate the distance of these stars from the Earth.
She's another one of these people who has been massively piggybacked or sort of hijacked by the big male astronomers.
Unbelievable. Like,
yeah. So
that discovery, right, Edwin Hubble would never have worked out that, like, the other galaxies are very, very far away, and you know, we would never have worked out that they were receding and moving further away from us. So without Henrietta Leavitt's discovery, we basically wouldn't have known that there was a Big Bang.
It should have been the Leavitt telescope up there.
Definitely shouldn't be the Hubble telescope. It should be the Leavitt telescope. And people sort of, you know, so the director of the Harvard College Observatory, a guy called Edward Pickering, he basically published her work saying, well, I'm the boss, so it's going to have my name on it. So basically took all the credit, and then his successor, Harlow Shapley, who, you know, people might have heard of, he basically built on that whole thing again to kind of, you know, work out where everything was in the Milky Way. And she just disappeared from history for ages and ages. She got nothing, and there's not even a plaque at Harvard like commemorating her work. I mean, it's not like she didn't do decades and decades of work over a lifetime, but I don't think that's the qualification for a great scientist.
No.
She basically saw something that was really interesting. She worked out that it was interesting.
So fundamental to our understanding of the universe as well. Yeah, I mean,
like gravitation in some ways. So she showed that you could use these observations to work out the size of everything, work out how far away everything is, which changed the entire face of 20th century astronomy.
Because before...
And cosmology.
Yeah, before her, I think I'm right in saying that everyone was looking at like Andromeda and effectively thinking, it's just the next door galaxy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then...
It's just beyond the sky, sort of thing.
It's just up there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then through her work, people like Hubble were able to be like, oh no, that's actually that is quite a long way away. But without her,
So you haven't heard of her because of the patriarchy, basically.
Yeah, the patriarchy's nicked the stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good. It's
Francis good Crick.
Well,
what's he got?
I've got to say, it's interesting to talk about the patriarchy nicking people's stuff, because I think it's very hard to talk about. So you will have heard of Crick and Watson because of their. That they proposed the double helix structure of DNA. But, and I think this is well known now, Rosamund Franklin was really instrumental in that work and doesn't really get the credit. And so there's something that makes me feel a bit uncomfortable about possibly putting, not that it's necessarily his fault, but that the perception is certainly that he took, him and Watson took the credit from when... at the very least, Crick, Watson and Franklin, really, is what you should think of.
Although people still argue about that, because I remember I read something by Matthew Cobb, who was our expert on a recent episode, and I can't think... Oh, geneticist.
Yeah, geneticist.
What will geneticists do next? And he says, actually, the photograph that they're supposed to have stolen was actually taken by another guy... who became Franklin's student. And so she had it in her office, but it wasn't actually taken by her. And so there's sort of, you know, a bit of mixed sort of, nobody's quite sure whether Franklin should have got more credit than she did. And I think that she probably should, but...
but it's not as clear cut.
It's not quite as clear. Okay. And Crick and Watson have been really poor. You know, when you read what they wrote about her afterwards, you know, they clearly didn't like her.
Yeah.
Watson wrote, you know, basically wrote stuff about, you know, she should dress better and, you know, wish she was better looking and did more with her hair or something like that.
Well, I mean, Watson comes across as an absolute bell end.
Yeah, and he still is an absolute bell end as well. But Crick, you know, Crick's sort of done. So obviously the DNA structure, that's a big thing, right?
It is.
With or without Franklin, it's still a big thing. And he is very instrumental on that. And he did a lot of work as a physicist turned biologist, sort of, you know, working out what was important to know about that. He's done a lot of work.
I respect that.
Yeah.
The sort of the trans. I mean, I don't think he should really come into this discussion, but he did. He started out as a physicist and then decided to switch to being a biologist.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably a sort of a vague idea notion that you can do that because it's all science. It's very different.
Yeah, like, yeah, it is. Like,
that's a big move.
Yeah.
To have been, you know, quite a high level physicist and then become a high level biologist. That's decent.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm arguing for him, but I think my temptation is to go leave it. I'm so angry about the fact she hasn't even got a plaque at Harvard.
Yeah,
I want her to have this.
I mean, it feels ridiculous, doesn't it? Like putting out like the guy, sort of the main guy behind DNA.
Yeah,
the discovery of the structure of DNA, going out basically in our first round.
Mm.
But I think Henrietta Leavitt is a kind of giant killer.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I think she's been given credit for.
She wouldn't have been the bookie's favourite going into that.
No.
Into that tie. But I think she's edging it for me.
Yeah, I think we're.
And can I say something which will be very controversial? Coming up with the structure of DNA, is it that big a deal? The genetics is the interesting stuff.
Or the stuff that comes afterwards.
Yeah, that's the stuff that's like really spicy in my view. Just the structure. I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, we're not putting Buckminster Fullerene in here, are we?
No, no, that's true.
Or sorry, Buckminster's Fullerene.
No, that's true.
What was he called? He was called Buckminster Fuller.
And it's called Buckminster Fullerene. And Harry Kroto, who basically accidentally got involved in that whole thing and didn't contribute a great deal, to the discovery. I mean, he got a Nobel Prize for that.
Mm.
But again, it's one of those things where you're like...
I mean, coming up with like structures of stuff, I don't find it that impressive. Sorry.
I mean, the guys who won the Nobel Prize for graphene aren't in here either, are they? So the guys at Manchester, Andre Geim, and I think Novoselov is the other guy. But they use sellotape and pencils and found the structure of graphene.
Yeah, and that is quite cool. But then they're all quite, I mean, the double helix is cool.
Yeah, yeah, they're all good.
The Buckminster Fullerene is cool.
But they're not fundamentally changing 20th century cosmology, are they?
No, they're not. Graphene is extremely satisfying when you sort of go, oh, that's nice. That's very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sticking Hen through.
And the winner of round two is the underdog in the red corner, Henrietta Leavitt.
Yeah, yeah, Henrietta's going through.
Massive.
All right, easy.
Time for round three, and in the red corner, Mary the Cura Curie versus Stephen the Big Bang Hawking.
This is fantastic. this is arguably the next two of the two that I'm looking forward to.
This is the game of the century, isn't it?
Mary Curie against Stephen Hawking, and I am going to argue for Curie. Unlucky. So I'm just going to say one thing. Initially, about Marie Curie, which is she is still the only person who has been awarded a Nobel Prize in two different sciences. Now sit the fuck down, Hawking. Well, I know you can't stand up, but like anyway, stay sitting down.
Oh, it's so hard.
This what you got?
So, I mean, as you well know, I mean, I'm no like bigger up of Stephen Hawking.
No,
and
also you cannot live with that heat. No one could live with that heat.
No, no, you're right. I mean, it is really hard. But let me just say, Stephen Hawking was a great scientist. Okay, let's get that out there. So there's no question that he was a great scientist. He predicted that black holes would emit radiation, did the maths, took quantum physics and cosmology.
Still never been proved.
Put them together, yes. It's
still never been proved.
But everyone thinks it's correct. Right?
Yeah.
That a black hole...
It sounds extremely plausible.
...will emit radiation and eventually evaporate and disappear from the universe, which creates an enormous like problem of like what happened to the stuff inside and the information about the stuff inside. Mm. And it's a really sort of really fruitful area of physics. So, you know, great science. To be fair, it was done and dusted in 1974.
Mm.
So you could argue that his greatest contribution was a long time, and the rest of his career was
That I don't That I don't but mind.
It
as
shouldn't
much.
Matter. It shouldn't yeah. matter. Yeah,
I think so. I think he sort of overstretched himself a bit.
Well, he got into that whole thing where he became a pundit and started like saying, "Oh, you know, we've got to worry about AI," and he didn't know jack shit about AI, really. No.
But I mean, we can't really criticise too much on that front.
Pot, kettle.
Can I, just for my own sort of, personal satisfaction, can I try and describe my understanding of Hawking radiation?
Yeah, go on, go on.
So I think in the quantum world, particles and antiparticles can just sort of appear out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Together, always paired.
Yeah.
And given that that happens, if it happens right on your event horizon, normally they spark into existence for some reason and then immediately annihilate one another, because that's what happens when
because of quantum uncertainty. Yeah, nothing can have zero energy, so it's got to be constantly sort of oscillating around zero.
So they burst into life and then they annihilate each other, gone, and then others, you know, spark up. But if you have that at the event horizon, you can have a scenario where one of the particles gets sucked into the black hole and the other one doesn't.
Yeah.
And so that is where the radiation...
So
it can't annihilate. And so you've got this sort of production line of radiation. So particles, antiparticles, whatever they are.
Yeah.
Right at the very edge of the event horizon of the black hole.
And eventually, so that means it's losing mass. It's losing energy, therefore it's losing mass.
Yeah.
And it will eventually just disappear away into nothing.
Yeah.
Which is mind-blowing.
But as I've just explained that, didn't sound that complicated, did it?
I mean, he never won a Nobel Prize, let alone two.
Yeah, if I can explain that, having read about it once about 20 years ago, I feel like, come on.
I mean, Curie's walking.
Curie's absolutely, I mean, really sorting the wounds, actually, that she's walking it.
There we have it, folks. By unanimous decision in the red corner, it's Marie Curie.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of no contest.
I don't think it is. And I've said nothing. I've whacked a couple of Nobel Prizes on the table and said, how do you like them?
Yeah.
I'm very confident. Confident, Curie.
All right.
Straight through.
Game over.
Bye, Stephen.
Round four to end this week's lineup. We've got the one you've all been waiting for. It's the big dogs. It's Einstein against Fermi.
Oh. Right, let me just tell you. I mean, Einstein is not only the most famous scientist in the world, you know, despite being dead. I mean, he's literally...
Hang on, do you know what? I'm going to... I need
people would say, you know, he's no Einstein. Nobody's saying he's no Fermi.
Right. I'm a big, big Fermi fan.
Okay.
But I'm not going into this feeling particularly confident.
I mean, I'm very impressed by Fermi.
Mm.
But Einstein was, you know, he was just a different league. So he had that year where he published three, like, game-changing papers in 1905.
1905, yes.
Yeah, and literally sort of set out special relativity.
Yeah.
And, you know, which starts from the premise that nothing can travel faster than the speed of light, and then basically works out a whole load of shit about how everything in the universe must relate to everything else and you know, relativity.
It's not bad.
You know, our GPS systems wouldn't work without it, right? And he also had the photoelectric effect, for which I think that was a thing he got given the Nobel Prize for. He basically showed that light exists in particle form, so photons, and you know, showed how, you know, these could be excited out of a surface, you know, if you put the right kind of energy in. So he did all the quantum stuff. He basically explained Brownian motion. And then he took a few years off and then came out with general relativity.
Yeah.
And, which describes the whole of the operation of space and time.
It's a decent CV. It is. And actually, he's the only one who, is literally, he's a phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the sort of, he's the gold standard of, like, if someone wants to say clever, you'd say Einstein.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
However,
all right, let's hear you.
Enrico Fermi. So the first thing that I think about with Fermi is the Fermi paradox.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Him saying, you know, when you run the numbers on the size of the universe, how old the universe is, how many habitable planets there are likely to be orbiting sort of sun-like stars. Basically, the universe should be absolutely teeming with aliens,
yeah,
or teem with technological civilizations even. And so where are they? And that's a great question. And it's a question that has sort of fascinated and perplexed people ever since he first formulated it. And we still talk about it. We're still fascinated by it. I think that people have heard of the Fermi paradox, not in the same way that they've heard of relativity, obviously,
yeah,
but it's a big one.
It is. It's a big one for nerds. Also,
no, but I think the general public are genuinely interested in aliens and where they might be.
I think
why
other
we
people probably had the same thought, maybe just didn't articulate it and get picked up on like Fermi did.
Agreed.
I mean, it's not his biggest
but that's the thing. It isn't. So he's got that. And then he came up with, and you'll, to be honest, this is stuff I don't even understand. I think you'll have to have a go at this. But he came up with a load of statistical laws that are called Fermi statistics.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of govern the certain particles, like fermions. And I don't really know what fermions are. So you need to pick one type
of particle. So you've got fermions and you've got bosons, and they obey different kinds of
bosons.
Laws.
Yeah, they're the Bose-Einstein ones.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just different types of. You basically split physical particles into two different characters, and you've got fermions, which are like electrons or fermions, for instance. Hope I've got that right. I'm having a blank at the moment.
I really hope you got it wrong, actually. But
I mean, the point is, yeah, in physics, he's huge, right?
Named after him.
Yeah, they're
like,
named, after,
named
him.
After him. That's good. I mean,
that's
I know
always
clearly,
a good sign.
But Bose Einstein, you know, he's not contributing to bosons.
No, that's true. So Einstein hasn't.
So he's lost that.
Yeah, so he's lost that. Fine. But and Fermi's huge. I'm not going to like put Fermi down at all.
But I've got one more. I've got paradox. I've got his own set of statistical laws governing particles.
Yeah, yeah.
A certain set of particles. Yeah. Massive.
Yeah.
Named after him.
Yeah.
And he effectively, I mean, there was a lot of people involved with this, but he effectively came up with something that led to the discovery of nuclear fission.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And then was involved with the actual, like, chain reactions, like doing the first nuclear chain reactions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely huge.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not disputing any of that at all. And against any other opposition, I think he'd do very well. I mean, he was kind of the mainstay behind the atomic bomb project.
Yeah.
So he had a huge role, in a sense, in ending the Second World War. You know, he was a phenomenal scientist and was undisputably brilliant.
I can't believe he's going out.
But he's no Einstein.
He's going out, isn't he?
I mean, it's a really bad draw for Enrico Fermi. That's all I can tell you.
Mm.
It's a tough one with these two heavy hitters, but sometimes clout trumps all. The winner of round four is Einstein.
Amazing guy.
Yeah.
Not good enough.
Really, really amazing. Okay. All right.
Do you accept that?
Yeah, I accept. I've got to. I'd be mad.
I think you do.
I think I've made a pretty strong case, but as you say, no Einstein. There we have it. The first of three episodes to decide who is the GOAT scientist. The winners of our first four knockouts are Newton, Leavitt, Curie and Einstein. You might have heard of them. Join us next time as we have eight new scientists. Richard Dawkins, Lynn Margulis, JBS Haldane, Archimedes, Charles Darwin, 2UU, Dorothy Hodgkin and Vera Rubin. Look some of them up. Eureka is a Stack production presented by Dr. Michael Brooks and Rick Edwards. The production team is Temi Adebayo, Katie Baxter, Luke Moore and Charlie Morgan. Sound design by Katie Baxter. Please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. Does make a massive difference. We also really love hearing from you guys. So if you have any burning questions you want us to answer, drop us an email at eureka@stack.london or you can find us, as always, on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.